ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। First, we should, as is customary and proper toward the end of such a festival, thank all the devotees who have made the festival possible, which means everyone, because there's no festival without devotees. We're regularly holding these festivals. The last one was in Somnath. Shravan Kirtan Kam, that was Vyasa Puja. Next one is in Mayapur, just after Nrisimha Chaturdashi. So it seems they're getting sweeter and sweeter, better and better. So I'd like to thank all of you again, all those who came, especially Haripada Prabhu. Very happy to have you here. I don't know if you'll be able to be for that one in Mayapur.
I haven't heard the date yet.
Oh, it's just right after Nrisimha Chaturdashi. That will be in Hindi, but of course someone can translate for you, just like that. 20th is Nrisimha Chaturdashi, so 3 days after that. We should have informed you earlier. It'll be a small one, probably, not so many devotees. Maybe the local Bengalis will also attend. But the number of devotees coming won't be that many. It's mostly for devotees in Assam who want to come and see me, because I'm not going there. And some others will come, I heard, from Bhopal and different places. So yeah, everything was on time, that's good. Good organization. Devotees were present in all the programs, beginning with Mangalati, very good. I heard that the prasadam was worth coming for again. And of course, what a place to be in. There's the whole of this land of Bharat is Punya Bhumi, but some places are more special than others. And this, what, there are no words to describe. Bhuvaikuntha, that's the description given. This Vaikuntha manifest in this world, Sri Ranga. So cooks, organizers, translators, everyone's working hard. Thank you so much. Just one technical point. You might have noticed that there was one basket of flowers placed just in front of Srila Prabhupada, which were, they're meant for offering in the Guru Puja, but I took it aside and said, don't offer it, because already placed before Prabhupada. If you put at his lotus feet, you can't take them away and again offer them. It's quite commonly done, I say, in our ISKCON temples, but actually it's avidhi purvaka. So it's just something that you could all note. So I'm going to speak now on Guru Tattva. It's a very big subject. As I'm giving initiation from time to time, I'm going through various verses which discuss Guru Tattva, various aspects of Guru Tattva. Now I'm going through verses which are in the Gauriya Kantaha, which is literally means Gauriya necklace, but it's a play on words, because Kanta means, yeah, necklace. Kanta means so that which adorns the neck or the throat. So these verses, they should adorn the throat of the Gauriyas, so it can be understood in both ways. So that's a collection of verses on various Vaishnav topics. And then there are so many. There are so many verses in Hari Bhakti Vilas, and so many Shastras and Puranas. So there's plenty to speak about. So that's very suitable on the day that we give initiation. And also, here in Tamil Nadu and in many places throughout the world, many devotees will be celebrating today the appearance of His Holiness Jayapataka Swami. And many, mostly devotees here in Sri Rangam and Trichy area. Mostly, I think they're all His disciples. So, to speak on Guru Tattva is very appropriate for that also. We should know who is a guru. What's the difference between a guru and anyone else? Someone is a barber, sometimes someone's a businessman, someone's a salesman, someone's a thief. There are different kinds of professions. Someone's a guru. Everyone has to do something in this world. So it's just a it could be seen as one kind of profession. And actually, in Hindu culture, it had become like that. Kula guru, it's just a family tradition. And in many times, not with any real spiritual import to it. So we should know, parampara jano bhalo mate. Bhaktisthan Sarasvati Thakur says, we should know very well what is parampara. I'm not going to speak on that, the meaning of parampara just now, because going through these verses, I've come to the point of discussing bogus gurus. So I may say, well, why are we going to discuss bogus gurus when we're giving initiation? Well, by knowing what is not right, we can better understand what is right. Another thing is that modern Hinduism, living in India, obviously we're living in a Hindu atmosphere. Modern Hinduism is very much influenced by and may be dominated by guru cults. Before, we used to see there were Vaishnavas, and Shaivas, Shaktas, but nowadays it's more followers of this Bappa and this Babba and this Amma and this Dada and like this. It's more guru cults now, more like that. So many bogus gurus. South India has its good share also of bogus gurus. Some self-advertised Paramahamsa. And even though it's exposed that he's definitely not a Paramahamsa, according to proper descriptions, Shastra description, he's going on. Many of his followers left him, but he's going on. So we should understand, according to Shastra, what is bona fide and what is not. Why is modern Hinduism so bogus? If we say this, many people will be upset, including maybe some of our own devotees. But if we see through the eyes of Shastra and the Acharyas, what goes on in the name of Hinduism is mostly bogus. There are many good things also, but so many bogus things. Actually, even the word Hindu is a misnomer. But we just use it conventionally. Otherwise it has no spiritual meaning. How has it come to this situation where the most popular cult in Hinduism today is worshipping a Muslim fakir? How has it come? Well, the principles of actual Vedic culture, Sanatan Dharma, are founded on Shastra and Brahmanas and Parampara, Guru Sadhu Shastra. But for various reasons, which I've taken quotations from Srila Prabhupada and put in that message to the youth of India, the culture is broken down nowadays. Parampara, the whole principle, everyone understood, we have to follow according to Shastra. You'll find in the introduction to Sri Upanishad, Srila Prabhupada's edition, which is based on talks that he gave in Conway Hall in London to a mostly Hindu audience. So that introduction is called What Are the Vedas? If you remember, I hope you've all read Sri Upanishad, Srila Prabhupada's commentary. So Srila Prabhupada, before answering that question, he speaks about the authority of the Vedas in Hindu life. He says that if someone says to something else, tells him something, that person may challenge him. Oh, you're saying, is it a Shastric injunction? In other words, even in ordinary talk, if someone says to someone, you should do this, or you should not, is it a Shastric injunction? That means the consciousness was there that we have to act according to Shastra. Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karyam Vyavastito Gyatva Shastra Vidhanoktam Karyam Karma Iharhasi. Krishna says, therefore, one should, to be free from the three gates to hell, lust, greed, and anger, one should act according to the injunctions of Shastra, to know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Because if you don't know, then pravritting chana vritting cha janana vidura suraha, then you're a demon. So we should, and that means we have to know what are the injunctions of Shastra. So Sanatan Dharma is Shastra based. But that's gone now. To a large extent, you'll find all these, I didn't mention the Sri Sri. He's the biggest of the bogus at the present time. Big reputation, but nothing. Spiritually, zero at best. So they talk any nonsense that comes in their head. They don't have any system of understanding. Just like Sri Ramanujacharya here, he gave, what is his, of course he has so many great contributions, but there were the Alvas before him, but one of his great contributions, which he here in Sri Rangam, when Yamuna Acharya had passed away, his three fingers were curled up. And then one of the things that Ramanuja said to open the finger is that he, Ramanuja, will compile a commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. So within his writings, especially his commentary, Sri Bhasha on Vedanta Sutras, he gave a systematic philosophical understanding. Shastra is there, but one has to, otherwise there's so many, we find at the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the sages at Naimisharanya, they said to Sutta Goswami, there's so many shastras, so many recommendations, just tell us what is the essence that can be beneficial for people in this Kali Yuga, wherein prayanal payaso sabya kalava smin yuge janaha mandasu manda matayo manda bhagya iupaduta. In this Kali Yuga, men have but short lives. They are of bad intelligence. They're unfortunate. And their mind is always disturbed. So how can they be benefited? They want to know this. So Shastra has to be there. One who is a guru has to be in a parampara with a specific siddhanta, specific teachings. It's not that the guru just pops up and says, I had a revelation in a dream, and this is it. His qualifications that he speaks according to Shastra and according to previous acharyas, and he himself is trained by a guru in parampara. So guru, sadhu, Shastra. He should have a clearly defined orthodox philosophy. That's why even though we are in Gaudiya Sampradaya, all bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas, we are opposed to the unqualified monism, Kevaladvaita, of Shankara. But nevertheless, we call him Shankaracharya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we find in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. He refers to him as Acharya. Why? Even though he's given a wrong teaching, but he's done it in the right way. It's according to, he's based it on Shastra, this Shankaracharya established after Buddhas. At least temporary. He destroyed the Vedic culture. Well, actually, practically whatever, a lot of what Buddha taught and a lot of the culture that he followed, it was the same Vedic culture, but his philosophy is a complete disaster. So is that of Shankara. But the difference between Buddha and Shankara is that Buddha rejected the Vedas, but Shankara reestablished the importance of the Vedas. So he established the importance of the Vedas and parampara and so many things, deity worship. So therefore, and he had a specific siddhanta. Therefore, he's known as Acharya. The word Acharya has various meanings. It can mean teacher in a school, someone who's teaching dancing. He's a dancing acharya. So from that level, and then any guru may be called an acharya. But this word, the sampradaya acharyas, are those who establish a sampradaya. That's what Ramanuja did. The alvas prior to him, they're not called acharya. But he established, Ramanuja Acharya established the sampradaya in a systematic way, in an organizational way, in so many ways also. He organized it, he gave rules for deity worship, established so many temples, and revived so many temples. But he gave the philosophical understanding, which if you're a Sri Vaishnava, then you have to know the Vishishtadvaita of Ramanuja Acharya. So this is the word Acharya, Sampradaya Acharya. This is the great Acharyas. They do that. They give the philosophical understanding, and then all other Acharyas following after that, they follow that same philosophy. They may explain it further. There may be differences between them, as in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. They're split into two groups, Varagalai Thengalai, based on 18 principal differences in philosophy. But they're all followers of Sri Ramanuja Acharya. Whereas these modern gurus, these bogus gurus, they don't have any fixed philosophy. I actually listened to something. It was a great torture, actually. Really, it was horrible to listen to this this Sri Sri guy, I listened to something he said, even the sound of his voice. Really, I mean, just not, it's all very sweet and sugary. But what he says doesn't make any sense. That's predictable. But he can just change his mind and say one thing, then say something else. It all comes from the Mayavada idea that, well, whatever you say, it's anyway, anything's all one, so what does it matter? It's so contradictory that in Buddhism they say, well, everything is empty. That means your teachings are empty, yes? Nothing actually exists. There's no Buddha. And how are you a Buddhist? No, there's no Buddhists. There's no enlightenment. There's no difference between samsara and nirvana. Since some Buddhists say that, then what does it mean to be a Buddhist? It doesn't mean anything. Very strange ideas. Anyway, I'd said I'd read from the from here. As far as bogus gurus are concerned, there's a very good interview. This was, I believe, 1969, quite early in Prabhupada's ministration in the West, where one reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, could you say something? There are so many gurus coming to the Western world. Could you say something about them? Prabhupada said, yes, they're all bogus. And he said, well, could you explain more? Yes, they're all nonsense. You can see it's in that, it's the first essay included in that book, The Journey of Self-Discovery. And the reporter agreed. He said, yeah, my own children are misled by the... There's this one, you had to pay him $30 and then you do some transcendental meditation. It's all nonsense. So Srila Prabhupada is very quite strict. In fact, in one purport, he says that the aim of this Krishna conscious movement is to kill all the bogus people who are posing as incarnations of God. Well, you're going to take that as it is. Kill their influence by spreading the Sankirtan movement. Okay, so I said I'd read some quotes from the Gaurya Kantaha. From Vishnu Smriti, from the Dharma Shastras. Paricharya yasho lipsu shishad guru gurur nahi. Paricharya means service. Yasha means fame. Lipsu means one who's desirous for, usually in a wrong way. So one who makes disciples for the sake of personal service. Now I have someone, who's going to look after me in my old age? Oh, I'd better initiate a few people and they look after me. It's my old age insurance policy. Initiate a few disciples, then they'll look after me. Or for fame. No one cares for me. Make some disciples, and then I'll become famous. So, it's not mentioned here, but obviously, that comes up in so many other. It'll come up in the next verse. One who initiates for the sake of taking the money of their disciples. That's a major complaint of these gurus. They become very wealthy. Of course, if one takes money and uses it in Krishna's service, that's all right. Srila Prabhupada said that if you give a devotee, no, actually said if you give a brahmana any amount of money, he'll still be poor. Why is that? Because he won't keep it. immediately use it in Krishna's service. So, Lord Shiva, also the head of a sampradaya, speaking to his wife about Guru Tattva, said, Guruvo Bahavo Santi Shisha Vittapaharakaha Durlaba Sadgurur Devi Shisha Santapaharaka. He said there are many gurus who they're very expert in taking away the wealth of their disciples, but it's very rare to find a real guru who can take away the misery of their disciples. One should approach a guru. Why? Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jignyasu shreya uttamam. This comes up in Bhagavatam. Therefore, one should approach a guru to inquire into the highest benefit for oneself. So therefore means there's something before that. And before that is a whole description of how this material world is miserable. Even if you go to the heavenly planets, there's suffering. You have to come down again. Therefore, it's not our ultimate good. Therefore, one should approach a guru to inquire into the ultimate good. We may think going to the heavenly planets is very good, but from Bhagavatam, we understand it's not. Therefore, we should approach a guru to inquire about the ultimate good. So someone may pose as a guru, but he's interested in getting the money of the disciples. Because that is the proper culture, that one should... Sarvartarhahanam. What is that? Sarvartarhahanam shisha. What is that verse? One should offer everything to the guru. Sarvartha means all one's money also. Sarvartha apanam guru. One should offer everything. So it's a good line. If someone thinks, oh, you be a guru and then people give you their money. Okay, well, it's better than being a rickshaw driver, so I think I'll become a guru. It may not be that everyone starts off with that motive, but when the money comes in, they may be dazzled by it. Kanaka Kamani Patishta Jamini Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur ones. It's a common term, Kanaka Kamani. These are the two, as Prabhupada points out in one of his purports, that women and wealth are two, it's a practically a common thing. That people who are transcendentalists, they get waylaid by the lures of women and wealth. So it might not be that all bogus gurus start off being bogus, but they become attracted by the facilities of guruship. And then instead of thinking how to benefit others, they think how to exploit them. And even in their own mind, they might not be conscious of this. They think, oh, it's very good if all these people give me their money, and then I'll enjoy it, and they'll get benefit from my enjoying it. There was very famous in the mid-19th century, there was the Maharaj libel case, which was in Bombay. One newspaper reporter, or newspaper owner come editor, he started writing all these articles against the Vallabh Sampradaya gurus, particularly one guru, who had the practice of enjoying his disciples' wives. And this newspaper reporter, who's a Gujarati man, and the guru was Gujarati, he wrote so many things against this. And this guru, he became very angry and he made a case against the newspaper reporter. This is libel. See, we're gurus. You don't understand. This is spiritual. This is our family right. We're purifying these women and then they've given us prasad to their husbands. He made a case. But they turned against him, actually. But he thought it was a great desecration of our rights as a guru. What are they doing? What are they saying? The guru he should enjoy everything that he enjoys on behalf of God. So there's no injunction in Shastra for a guru to accept the wives of his disciples. Accept them, yeah, you can accept them also as disciples and guide them, but not to enjoy them. There's no such injunction. One may accept the money of the disciples, but that also not for personal enjoyment. It accepts on behalf of God to use it in the service of God. That's the idea. So someone may see all the money coming and become bewildered. Women coming, very devotional. They have such regard for you. They'll do whatever you say. They may be very simple-minded also, very gullible. So if you tell them that I want to give you some special mercy, they may fall for that. So don't fall for that. Ladies, if anyone says to you that now I'm a great sadhu and I want to give you some special mercy, don't fall for that. Oh. Infertility cures. The sadhus, they know the woman's not able to have a child. Okay, the sadhu, he'll look after that. Don't fall for that. Don't think that this is spiritual. That you should immediately reject. Then, from Hari Bhakti Vilas, snehad va lobhato va pi yo grihniyad dikshaya tasmin guru sashishye tat devata shapa apatet. If a guru accepts someone as a disciple out of greed, he thinks, oh, he's a very rich disciple. Great, let's grab him and initiate him before anyone else does. Or out of mundane affection. Well, actually he's not following, but I like him. Or my disciple, I have affection for this disciple and this disciple is being, please initiate him even though he's not following. In such a case, if a guru neglecting the proper standard for giving diksha gives the mantra to the disciple who's not really qualified to be a disciple, or the guru does it out of the wrong motivation, then the demigods curse that guru along with the disciple. So there's no actual benefit from it for either of them. Yo vyakti nyaya rahitam anya yena shrinoti yaha tavu bho narakam ghauram vrajata kalam akshayam. Anyone who takes the position of an acharya or poses as an acharya, but he speaks against the conclusion of Shastra or acts in that way, he goes to hell, the darkest hell, narakam ghoram, terrible hell. For kalam akshayam, it means unlimited time. Not really unlimited, but for a very long time. Along with his disciples and whoever else hears such non-devotional talks. So the guru is supposed to teach and preach, but if he preaches the wrong thing, he goes to hell. along with his disciples. Then from Jiva Goswami's Bhakti Sandarbha, Vaishnava Vidveshi Chet Parityaja Eva. One who is, yeah, then we're coming to the point of rejecting a guru. So first, this quote from Bhakti Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami is a description or explanation of a verse from Mahabharata which Bhishma spoke to Parashuram. Parashuram was the guru, astra guru, fighting guru of Bhishma. But girl Amba, was it Amba? She asked Parashuram to order Bhishma to marry her. But Bhishma said, "No, I took a vow. I'm not going to marry her." And Parashuram said, "You should do what your guru said." And in reply, Bhishma said, "Guru rapyavalitasya kaya karyama janataha utpata pratipannasya parityago vidhiyate." A guru who is addicted to sensual pleasure and polluted by vice, who is ignorant and doesn't know how, he doesn't know what to tell you what should be done and what not should be done, who's fallen from the proper path, should be fully rejected. Vidhiyate. So he's summing up the Vedic injunctions here. And then Bhishma went on to fight Parashuram using the same knowledge that Parashuram had taught him. So that's really extreme, isn't it? So commenting on this, Bhakti Sandarbha, in the Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami says, Vaishnava vidveshi chet parichajya eva. One who is envious of Vaishnavas should be completely rejected. Guru rapya valiptas ye iti smaranat. Remembering this verse from Mahabharata, which I just quoted, spoken by Bhishma. Remembering this verse, tasya Vaishnava bhava rahityena avaishnavataya avaishnava upadishteneti vachana visayatvacha. So then he's referring also to another verse, so I better read that verse also. Avaishnava upadishtena mantrena nirayam vrajit punascha vidhina samyagrahayad vaishnavad guru ho. If one, often people ask this, well, I'm already initiated by such and such a guru. Now I came to learn what is an actual guru, but I can't give up. You see, you can't give up your guru. But Shastra says that if you accept a non-Vaishnava as a guru, then the result of that is that you go to hell. Therefore, according to the proper rules and regulations, one should again, accept mantra initiation from a proper guru, from a Vaishnava, proper Vaishnava. So, commenting on this, commenting on the Guru Api Avaliptasya verse and the Avaishnava Upadishtena verse, Jiva Goswami says, such a person, he doesn't have the Vaishnava Bhava. If he is envious of others or gives envious of Vaishnavas, gives wrong instructions, then one should consider the injunctions of Shastra. Yatokta lakshanasya sri gurura vidyamanata yastu tasyaiva mahabhagvatas yaikasya nitya sevanam paramang shreyaha. So one should know these injunctions of Shastra and abandon the false guru who doesn't know how to instruct properly is one case, and another case is who may superficially be a Vaishnava but who's actually envious of Vaishnavas. So after leaving one who lacks the true qualities of a guru, then you have to have a spiritual guide, so you should seek out, he said here, Mahabhagavata, and serve him. By constantly rendering service to such a pure devotee, one will attain the highest benefit, paramam shreyaha. Also in Bhakti Sandarbha, paramartha gurva shrayo vyavaharika gurvadi parityagena api kartavyaha. One should not accept a spiritual master based on hereditary, social, or ecclesiastical convention. Such a professional guru should be rejected. One must accept a qualified spiritual master who can help one advance towards the ultimate goal of life, Krishna Prema. So it may be that, well, we have our family guru, so we have to accept this as guru. But it may be that the family guru is a bona fide Vaishnava. It's not necessarily that the family gurus are not bona fide. But if they're not bona fide and one simply accepts a guru out of some, it's just what we do in our family. Or, everyone else is taking initiation from this guru, so I will too. Without thinking about it or understanding it. That's not the way to accept a guru. It's not a cheap thing. One should understand very clearly. So, in this talk, I haven't spoken much about what are the actual qualifications of a guru, but as I say, this is a series of talks. So, already some of them are spoken, and if Krishna so desires, then I may be able to speak more about this. And actually, everything's in Srila Prabhupada's books. So if you read Srila Prabhupada's books carefully, thoroughly, regularly, which you all should do, that's an important part of being a disciple, unless you are illiterate, then you can understand all these points. Even now we're going through this systematically, but one who's clearly, very carefully studies Srila Prabhupada's books, they can just understand, even without making much analysis, what is bogus and what is not bogus. Because the Bhagavatam is meant for that, for distinguishing reality from illusion for the benefit of all. So in this regard, I'll just finish this talk here. I'd like to invite Vaikunthananda Prabhu's father just to speak a few words. Yesterday he told me now his great appreciation for reading Srimad Bhagavatam. So I thought that would be nice to share with all of you and to encourage all of you, if you're not yet reading Srimad Bhagavatam, to start. Yeah, so please, you can give, please come up, give a chair here, and a microphone. And you can speak in Tamil. Yeah, so anyone who doesn't have a set of Bhagavatam in their home, you please get one. If you have to give marriage gifts, you give a Bhagavatam set. Marriages, they get 25 mixies. No one gives Bhagavatam sets. Give them a Bhagavatam set. So, Hare Krishna. Then at 10:30, Haripada Prabhu is going to speak on the 10 offenses that we don't commit, we're not meant to commit, against the holy name, and on Brahminical initiation. And I'll come maybe 11:45, 12 o'clock, something like that. So everyone please come, especially those who are... Actually, everyone should come. I'll be in the bathroom, so I won't come. But those who are to be initiated, they compulsorily must come. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.